through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Let Ross cook!
Ding, 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 ding.
One more time!
Let Ross cook! Ding, 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 ding.
That's something sizzling in a pan.
Hey, Jake, what do you think about hashtag let Russ cook?
I hate you guys.
Why?
Jake, we're
just supporting you.
Oh, you're supporting. It's great. It's great. That was really good.
Hashtag let Russ cook. You know what I actually just saw?
Yeah.
I saw a hashtag let Pat cook.
Really?
Meaning like Pat Mahomes.
Really?
Oh. Apparently, well, he goes by Patrick because of his dad. Right.
Apparently Kansas City isn't letting Pat Mahomes cook either.
They're not letting him throw the ball around.
Andy Reid is holding him back.
Apparently. I mean, my goodness. It's one of those things where, look, the overall premise of let Russ cook from the conversation that has sparked from, you know, Seahawks Twitter and just an overall sentiment that has happened amongst Seahawks fans, I'm not against the premise of putting the ball in your best player's hands and allowing him to do what he does best and have an impact on this game. We have been critical at times of the Seahawks offense, relying too much in the run when it didn't make sense, or, you know, sequencing of plays when it didn't make sense. And obviously the struggles to start slow in the first half versus, you know, having scorching finishes in the second half and fourth quarter. I understand that premise. But I think that this let Russ cook conversation has turned into this mythical idea that no one really understands or really understands the premise or the conversation at, which is what is realistic for this Seattle Seahawks team and for Russell Wilson himself to accomplish. And that's the part where I'm really getting annoyed and frustrated by seeing so much of this conversation, because it's outlandish. There's so many people, they're just throwing out random stuff and they have no idea where the conversation actually is supposed to be going. And let's come up with a criteria that we can look at, engage, and that we can actually formulate an idea as to what exactly is that conversation.
Okay,
and how can we critique
before
that
we go in
forward.
18 different directions here? Let Russ cook is Seahawks Twitter saying Russ should be turned loose.
Yes,
right.
Hunter, that is the general premise of the conversation.
Okay, so essentially, then it's an anti-shoddy war cry.
It is. I would say it's an anti-shoddy war cry. It's more so an anti-Pete Carroll war cry.
Okay, but it's anti-coaching. These two guys,
correct,
are holding him back.
Yes,
and you disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that overall premise from the standpoint that you need to put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands more. Now, how much more are we talking here? Are we talking about 40 to 35 attempts a game? No, I think the reality is that maybe getting the ball in Russell Wilson's hands 30 times a game is probably a really good idea. He's your best player. He's efficient. He takes care of the football for you. And he is constantly putting you in great positions. He's one of the best players in this league. That, to me, is realistic. 40 times a game. To me, it's more about timing and sequencing than it is about necessarily, you know, the difference between run and pass and the ratios in which is involved in.
So that's what they need Brian Schottenheimer for, is to decide the sequencing. Because I'm gonna go for broke here, Stacey. I'm gonna go wild.
I'm gonna say my impression of
okay.
All this.
I'm in the middle of this tweet.
Okay.
Do the Seahawks
be careful, Tom?
I do
don't
need
get
to be
Twitter
careful.
Fingers.
Well, I don't care. You know, it's a Wednesday.
Okay.
He's feeling wild. He's feeling dangerous.
I'm feeling
then
pretty
roll
good.
With it, man.
I'm
roll
all
with
amped
it.
Up on
press
latte
send
here.
Now. Don't even finish it.
Do the Seahawks even need an offensive coordinator?
Okay. Don't send that tweet. don't send that tweet.
And that goes into this conversation of. Let Russ cook.
Let Russ cook.
Ding, 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 ding.
Let Russ cook.
Let Russ cook. I thought we were doing it one more time. Let Russ cook. Okay, got it out. Look, here, Jake, this is my impression of it. Tell me if I'm off base.
Okay.
Okay. When I hear "Let Russ Cook," I hear it as my interpretation is that the Seahawks could be passing more in the second half or the first half. You wouldn't have to lean so much on Russell Wilson to keep you in the game and put you back in the game in the second half, and you could run more in the second half, or to get comfortable passing more on early downs, so like on a first down pass attempt or second, as opposed to people thinking that it's a run pass every time kind of offense. So that's my interpretation of it. I'm actually not opposed to getting in some more pass attempts in the first half, and they haven't consistently been run heavy in the first half, although I think you can say that they are a team that is far more closer to a 50-50 split than a team like Kansas City. But I think why it annoys you is that sometimes in sports we can become kind of an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And as a former player and someone who not only knows a lot of these people, but tries to have critical conversations about how teams can be better, it bothers you when people just kind of echo criticism without saying, well, here's what I'd like to see.
Right. There is a part of that. There is a part of saying, hey, let's let Russ cook. Let him take over games and let's do this, this, and this. Well, there is actual ways and strategy and criteria that you can actually hit to then move forward in that direction. The one thing that they will not do, and this is what everybody's been clamoring about, and you know, we've had this conversation, is I'm sorry, but we talk about, there's another part of this is that, you know, Bill Parcells is, I think it was Bill Parcells, Kyle can come in and correct us later, but famously said that you it's about picking the groceries. You know, you can't cook unless you have the groceries.
Why would Kyle, hold on a second? Why would Kyle have that knowledge?
Because he threw it out around there. It was a saying that he heard from.
That's Kyle knows everything, Tom.
Bill Parcells or Belichick or somebody like that. And I just want to make sure we get it right.
How about the lifelong Giant fan over here?
Ah, you have it.
Yeah, but you're in a bit of a breakup with the Giants.
Right.
That we're trying to navigate.
That doesn't mean I've forgotten everything about my ex-girlfriend.
Well, I know, but maybe we don't want to ask
Russ
you.
Let Russ cook. Let Russ cook.
So was it Parcells?
What?
That said that?
Yeah.
Okay. So
he said
Parcells.
He said if I'm going to cook the meal, I should be able to shop for the groceries. He actually said it when he was coaching the Patriots. But I digress.
Okay. So when you talk about that concept, it's not saying that Russell Wilson needs to be deciding what groceries he should be working with. But there's a conversation there of you got to look at realistically of what this team can be. They're never going to be the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm sorry. They could, if maybe after Pete Carroll, you know, his time is over here in Seattle at some point in time, maybe they hire an offensive coordinator, a guru from that tree, and they get into that offense. But under Pete Carroll and with Brian Schottenheimer, that's not what their identity is. I'm not saying that they are going to stay in the dark ages, but let's be realistic. Are they going to be more like the Kansas City Chiefs, or are they going to be more like the San Francisco 49ers?
So here's my question.
Based off the personnel that they have.
Right. If you're saying, well, some of these are just unrealistic things that aren't going to happen and you're just going to be mad forever, then what are things that they are going to do? Because if part of the problem is that when people say, oh, well, I want to see the Seahawks do this more, and you say, well, that's not really feasible with Pete's philosophy. What's feasible with it? Like, how would you use Russell Wilson as an offensive coordinator in a way that they weren't doing this past year?
That's a great question. I think that they're first and foremost, the one thing that they have to do in this offseason is they have to get at least two legitimate offensive linemen here in free agency and through the draft. They have to get at least two. So now you have three out of your five guys that you feel very, very good about. Frontline guys, you're going out and paying. And for the last couple years, Russell Wilson and pretty much his entire career has struggled or has had the challenge of playing at an MVP type level with an offensive line that consistently is one of the worst in the league. You can't do that moving forward and expect different results in the passing game. So that's first and foremost. You have to get better and surround him with better protection up front. The other thing is that, you know, you look at it, and I think there's two ways about it, is being willing to throw the ball more on early downs, first, second down. And when I talk about willing to do that more, I don't think it's an exorbitant percentage, but you're willing to put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands. And the other part of it is you look at this and there's got to be more creativity. I give you a great example is the Arizona Cardinals the second time around. You remember their first drive of the game? You remember the first drive of that game, guys?
No, I was on a plane. Sorry.
Oh, that's
right.
You
were traveling. Cardinals the first time around?
No, the second time around, and their first drive of the game. There was motion. There was fly sweeps. There was creativity. There was an offense that was making a defense constantly have to look and move and have to account for everything that was around them. And the Seahawks actually spatially put the defense in a constant bind. Then they got away from that. Immediately got away from it. So we've seen flashes of Brian Schottenheimer in this offense and with Russell Wilson be very creative and dynamic. And it just goes away at some point in time. And it doesn't really make sense. So, you know, that creativity, that willingness to put the defense on the edge with motions and shifts and putting your personnel in the right situations, those are things that you have to try and get better at moving forward. And I guarantee you that is going to be something that this offense, as they continue to evolve in year three, Brian Schottenheimer has had great production with this group, year one to year two, and I expect them to continue to evolve in year three
quickly,
if everybody can stay patient.
Before we get to three questions here, I'm just reading from Greg Bell's piece in the News Tribune. You hear me attributing the article, by the way, just so everybody out there who's listening knows.
Good job, Tom.
Yeah. Attribute opinion, people. Media people. From
okay.
Greg Bell's article. Not everybody in this media does that, as you're well aware, Stacey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Sure.
People stealing ideas. I'm not an idea stealer. I attribute.
I'm an attributor.
So from Greg Bell's wonderful piece here at the News Tribune, he's got a Pete Carroll quote about what you're talking about. He says, it's important. I hope we can keep our guys connected. I don't want to see a big change there. Meaning he is likely to go with the same guys he's currently got in that offensive line.
Yeah. I think what's weird, though, is during that conversation, he kind of talked about younger guys, too. So that could be part of we have some belief.
Younger guys we already have?
We have some belief in younger guys like JaMarco Jones and Phil Haynes.
And
yeah, I would have considered JaMarco Jones part of that anyway.
Right. And he also brought up Demetrius Knox, who is a guy that was IR on center. I look at this and I say, after every year, Pete Carroll is always going to talk positively about his guys and want to have that continuity. Ultimately, what ends up happening, I think, is going to be a little bit different. Maybe they keep Mike Iupati. Maybe they keep DJ Fluker, one or the other. But I don't anticipate them keeping both guys. I think that they have to get a really good acquisition at one of their guard positions and a really good acquisition at their right tackle. I don't think there's really any excuses not to get that done.
I'm going to steal your idea. Write an article about it. What do you think?
You do for it. Go for it.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey brought to you by Car Toys. I have three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the we got to protect the kids nonsense.
Who's the single most important figure in this Super Bowl? Who does it revolve around?
I think Andy Reid. I was trying to think about, you know, am I thinking of a player that could have the most impact? Am I thinking of who it might mean the most to? And this could be some recency bias. I listened to ESPN's daily podcast this morning about Andy Reid. And yesterday's was Kyle Shanahan's. Today was Andy Reid's. And it was just interesting to hear about his rise, the type of coach that he's been, and how he came just short and then kind of had a fault, right? And he looked very human and made a very human error and then never got that Super Bowl win. And Patrick Mahomes did a separate interview at the Super Bowl this week and was asked who that win might mean more to, him or Andy Reid. And he said it might mean more for him. I might be happier for him than I would be for myself.
I would think so. I mean, Mahomes is still a young guy.
Right.
I think it revolves around Mahomes only because he's the best player in the league, I think. I think he's better than Lamar. I think last year it was his MVP year. He should have gotten there last year, didn't. And now he's the best player in this game. I think it revolves around him.
Yeah, I would say that the storyline, the sentiment is going to be with Andy Reid. And he's going to be, we talked about this yesterday, a guy that's going to really be in the hearts of so many, that so many across the league are going to be rooting for him to win the Super Bowl. But the attention and most important figure in the game is going to be Patrick Mahomes. How Patrick Mahomes plays is ultimately going to be the deciding factor in this game. And if Mahomes is going to be an impactful player, It's going to be really hard for the Kansas City Chiefs to lose. But if the 49ers defense can hold Patrick Mahomes and can contain him and limit him, I think that that's going to be a storyline in and of itself. So I agree. Patrick Mahomes is going to be the most important figure in the Super Bowl.
Number two.
This could be very difficult.
I'm preparing myself.
Roger Goodell had his Super Bowl press conference today. Name one thing, if you can, that you like about Roger Goodell.
In the sports pit, when we were debating this question, Brandon said he didn't take the Sonics.
He's not responsible.
He's
for
not
taking
responsible
the
for
away.
The Sonics leaving Seattle.
He's not responsible for that. I will say, under Roger Goodell, that the NFL has continued to grow and prosper.
Yeah.
That this is something that he has not driven this league into the ground. I mean, if you remember when all the player safety stuff came in and all the rule changes were coming in, how everybody was screaming and crying how this is going to ruin the game, and it hasn't. I mean, if only anything, it has continued to grow in popularity, and it's pretty amazing to watch that get done and see all the new TV deals that are getting done, the revenue streams that are coming in, the possible gambling money that will end up coming into fruition. I mean, you gotta tip your hat to Roger Goodell for at least helping continue to grow the league.
What about you, Tom?
I can't think of anything that I specifically like. Like,
I mean,
I point to that quality. I say, man, he does a great job with that. But there's nothing that I specifically dislike about him either.
But maybe that's what makes him work for the NFL as the NFL is right now.
Yeah, he's perfect for the job.
Yeah. He does the kind of PR where it looks like bad PR from afar, but it ends up being brushed under the rug.
Yeah, he can take slings and arrows better than anybody.
Without question. And he's getting paid a lot of money to be able to do so. I mean, I guess you could say it's not something that I necessarily like about the guy, but you talk about being the front man for all the owners. I mean, he plays that role to a T.
I love the ongoing jokes of him because he's booed every time he walks onto the stage in the draft.
Right.
The idea of him walking out with like a kid each time, or walk out holding like five puppies. Oh, you want to boo me now? Use a shield.
Next.
Number three.
Why is it important to get on board with the Mariners now as opposed to when they start winning?
That's a good question, because here's the thing. I think for a lot of Mariners fans, they're not going to feel regret jumping on board and being a bandwagon fan necessarily, waiting until they get good for them to invest. But I do feel like the getting on board now is going to be important, because it's going to allow the once you turn over and get to that other side, hopefully that's what happens, that's going to be that much sweeter, because you followed this team. You followed these young guys and the turnaround that Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais and this organization, John Stanton and crew, are trying to get accomplished. I think that will be a very rewarding piece to this as a fan. So to me, that would be the reason why it would be important to get on board now. Rather than wait and see what happens. And the other side of it, too, is that I think you're only helping continue the organization to grow and get better as, you know, you're jumping on board now rather than waiting and this wait-and-see game.
Yeah, I'd say the opportunity to see a lot of firsts could be pretty fun for fans. You obviously don't know whether every prospect is going to work out, and honestly, they don't. Not every prospect works out, but I think they have some really interesting ones for the first time in a while. They have a really, really young team, and part of what's going to be tough about that is, A, waiting to see some of these guys. It shouldn't be too far gone, right? It could be the second half of this year that you see quite a few of them, but young guys are going to make mistakes, and there's going to be games that might feel tough to watch, but within that, you're going to see potentially a first home run for someone that could be a face of an organization in a couple of years. You know, imagine if you could go back and see, you know, a first home run for, I'm not saying anyone's going to be Griffey, but there could be someone who becomes a core member of this organization moving forward that they really, really love. And it's been a while since they've had someone that exciting. And I think being there you know, if you're a fan or just covering the team, to see some of that could be kind of cool. It's not usually an opportunity you get.
Yeah, if you go on that journey with them from the very beginning, when they finally win and you've invested yourself that much, it's going to pay off that much more for you emotionally. If they don't win and the whole thing falls apart, you will have a right to just put them on blast like you never have before.
Yeah.
That is very true. But they, you know, I think in this town there's so much cynicism as to the Mariners and as to, you know, the moves and the willingness to trust that this organization that I don't know if a whole lot of people are going to be able to have that right there, Tom.
What do you mean?
I think there is an overwhelming majority in this town because of the history of the Mariners that are just, they're cynics. They're cynics about every single move, every single thing that is being said, right or wrong, about what the Mariners are doing. And I really like what the Mariners are doing in the sense that they are showing their hand. They are being as open and honest as they possibly could be in this situation. So for me, it's much more easier as a fan to digest what's going on and to actually buy into what's happening right now, because I don't expect them to have too many wins in the W column heading into 2020, but there are certain things that I'm excited to be watching for and watching to develop.
Well, I showed Sock the poll I ran yesterday with the, you know, how do you count yourself? How do you identify as a Mariner fan? 3,300 people voted. 54% of them are all in and they're patient.
Yeah, but I also would say that maybe that Twitter poll is a little skewed because the people that are following you in particular probably are paying attention to, you know, local sports and baseball and, you know, Seahawks and whatever, right? Yeah, and fish updates, I'm sure.
No, 3,300 people, ask any statistician. That's plenty sufficient.
And the fact that 54, to me, even 54% that said that they were patient and all in, I mean, that is surprising, and it is, I would say, not just surprising, but I'm losing the word here, but it is encouraging.
Let Russ cook! Let Russ cook! Let Russ cook! It makes him so mad!
Sox in here next, 710 ESPN.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
I'm Mike Sock.
I'm a modern-day warrior.
Mike Sock.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Fine.
We're doing good.
We're
yeah?
Fine.
Yes.
You know what Let Russ Cook means?
Huh?
You know what Let Russ Cook means?
Who's Russ Cook?
No.
Bus Cook?
Bus Cook. He was Russ's old agent, right?
Hashtag Let Russ Cook.
Really? Is that like hashtag girl dad that's going around also? There's a lot of hashtag these days.
It might be, yeah. I mean, in this area, it is very popular.
I like the hashtag girl dad trend.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
It's a very
cool. I am a girl dad. I got two girls. So
yeah.
I'm right on board. Yeah, let's go. Hashtag girl dad.
Hashtag let Russ cook.
Okay, does that mean if you want to buy the groceries, you got to cook the whatever, like Bob Kraft and Bill Parcells?
Yeah, kind okay. of. You're on the right track.
So they're saying Russell's buying the groceries, but they're not letting him cook the meal?
He needs to have further authority over cooking the meal.
Oh, my gosh.
Better question. Do they need an offensive coordinator at all?
Oh, no. They should just like Bob Greasy. He should just call the plays
yeah,
on his own.
That's what I think.
No,
Tom, you didn't tweet that out, did you?
Yeah, sure I did.
No, you did not.
You're going to get attacked.
I know I'm not getting attacked.
You're going to get attacked.
Dude, I'm having fun today.
Maybe physically.
Let me read you a couple of critiques that I have seen from the crowd of this concept.
So hold on, is this a group, the Let Russ Cook? Is this like the same old Mariners?
It's
a group.
It is a group, and it is a large group. A large group. It's not
that?
It's not a small group.
You sure it's not just
group.
A Twitter group?
I'm pretty sure. Mm.
Twitter's not that big. Don't fool yourself into thinking Twitter's real life.
I know it's not.
All right.
He has to learn that on his own,
right? All right, fair.
Okay. One.
Took us 13 years. Sorry, go ahead.
Wanting better first half production, better sequencing of play calls,
okay.
Throwing the ball more than 40 times a game.
Bruce,
Russ needs to be calling the plays. Better quick passes, and that will open up the deep passes. No more 2nd-and-10 runs. Fire Shoddy and let Russ call the plays. No more run pass. Build a better O-line around him. Stop running the ball so much on early downs. Need more creativity. Need to be like the Kansas City Chiefs offense. Need to stop being cowards on fourth down.
I'm okay with some of those.
That kind of all kind of encompasses some of the let Russ cook conversation.
Yeah, you know what? But that's the same group as the Fire Pete Carroll group. They just don't understand what Pete wants to do and Pete's philosophy. Oh, they want to score a bunch of points in the first quarter? We saw what that looks like. They generally don't win the game. Do they not know the mantra for the Seahawks? Do they not know whether and when you can win games and when you cannot?
Yeah, but they
Jake,
look
can
at
you win
and
a
say,
game in the first quarter?
Well,
God. Jake.
You can if you're the Chiefs.
No, you can't.
Sure, you can.
You cannot win a game in the first quarter, nor the second, nor the third. Just ask Bruce Irvin. You cannot win the game until the fourth quarter.
But
that's
the idea is
do.
Probably that maybe you don't have your quarterback need to win the game in this third and fourth quarter.
But you do. That's the way most games go in the NFL. Most games in the NFL are decided at the end of the game by quarterbacks, and the good ones win them and the bad ones don't.
Do you have evidence to support that?
No, I just watch the NFL. I don't need numbers. Just watch the
Those
games.
Those are the ones that you remember. Those are the games you remember. Every Sunday, there's a 20-point blow. There's a handful of them.
Not many. The NFL is based on, for the most part, there being close games. There have been a couple more recently because there's some teams that have been really bad. But for the most part, the NFL is based on winning close games, and the Seahawks are set up to do that. I think they take advantage of Russell's best skills. Russell's, I think, of his skills, his number one deal is that he makes good decisions and that he's incredibly efficient. And when you are an efficient player like Russ is, you don't need to throw the ball 45, 50 times a game. Russell is at his best because he is so efficient when you keep that number somewhere around 30. And so I don't feel the need to change the entire style. Mm-hmm. Pete's got if you want to go and find the new coach and do a whole new thing, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and B, you'd be committing to something wholly different than you have right now when what you're doing right now has worked for the most part.
Right. And one of the other interesting things is that you see pop up is this obvious conversation about the offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, and Russell Wilson, and Pete Carroll, and needing both of those guys to get out of his way, and he should just be calling his own plays. What do you say to that? Because I look at Brian Schottenheimer, and I think he's done an incredible job in the 2 years. Can it be better? Can it be more creative? Sure. But he's done a pretty good job.
I thought he did a great job. I'm sorry. I just didn't see the offense as even a little bit of the problem with the team this year. I thought Shoddy had a really good season. Perfect? No. Is he the best offensive coordinator in the league? No. Does he show off all of his offense? No, probably not. And he could probably do a better job, especially in key third downs, in finding ways to get guys open specifically. I think there's probably some design work that he could be better at. But I thought he was a decent play caller, certainly better than his predecessor. I think that their offense is generally well-balanced. He developed a rookie wide receiver in DK Metcalf and had him have one of the better years any rookie wide receiver has ever had. Some of that, I think, speaks to the simplicity of his system and allowing a young wide receiver, a position that is notoriously difficult to get production from right away, to have the kind of success that they did. Without a tremendous amount of weaponry, they were incredibly successful and even lost a whole bunch of good players to injury over the course of the year. And I'll include Tyler Lockett in that, who was never quite the same after he got hurt. So I thought their offense was fine. For the second straight year, their defense was the problem. And for every let Russ cook hashtag out there, I'm going to have my own. I have to think of what it is, but it's going to be fix the defense.
Fix the defense.
No matter what, we're going to chant.
It doesn't have the same ring to it, I guess.
No, but you can think of rhymes.
All right.
Yeah, get creative.
I'll get creative. When I come back to see you guys tomorrow, I'll have a better hashtag for this, but I'm sorry. The last two playoff games the Seahawks have lost was much more on their defense than their offense. In both of those games, third down defense ended up the problem.
This year,
in the final drive, if they can get off the field on two separate third and longs, Russell gets the ball back, and even with his flawed offense, I'm willing to bet he goes down the field, scores, and we continue to see what happens.
Don't tell her to hold on. This is her show.
Well, no, but wait.
And
if we're playing,
go back a year, it's the same problem.
Yeah.
If you can get Dak Prescott off the field instead of allowing him to complete a third and 15, was it, where he ran for a touchdown?
Yes.
It was more than third and 10. I want to say it was third and 15.
Third and 15 or 14.
You might very well win that game, too. So I'm not going to point at the offense when the defense just it gets a pass. No, thank you.
Well, and I don't disagree with you. It's just I wonder how much you can improve in a single year with the resources they have. And then maybe that plays into the argument of, okay, well, if you can't take a, because it has to be a big step forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were near the bottom of the league in many important key categories. It's not like you're mid-tier and you're a pass rusher or two, you're a Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett away from taking the next step. You might only bump up to like a middle of the road defense. And who knows, right? They have some of the pieces to get higher than that, but who knows if it comes together. So I think the question people are asking is, well, if you can't make that take a big step forward, and if you don't have a good defense, then you have to lean more on Russell, don't you?
No. I don't think they're that far away on defense. I think the defense is bad, but I think getting two pass rushers in there would change it monumentally. That was not all of them, but most of the problems with the defense can come back to the pass rush.
Yeah,
can't get after
the
passer. Is Wyman's article up yet on 710sports.com mm-hmm. detailing how good the Seahawks were on drives in which they got a sack?
Yes.
There's like a gigantic, would they allow one touchdown on a drive where they had a sack this year? That's a staggering number. Too bad they only had seven sacks or whatever it was. I mean, their sack leader had four, and it was Rashim Green.
Yeah.
Get to the passer, affect what the other team is trying to do against you, and you're right there. They don't. I mean, look, I would love for them to get another corner and to get a safety and get some playmakers on the back end, but what they really need is guys who get after the quarterback, and they don't have that right now. The corpse of Ziggy Ansah didn't get it done. Rashim Green has developed into a spare part that is probably worth keeping around, but a starter? You're rushing Brandon Jackson and Rashim Green and Quentin Jefferson. Say that out loud and tell me that that is a defense that is capable of taking you to the Super Bowl. It is not. Get Jadeveon Clowney on one side, get another guy at his level on the other side, either through the draft or free agency, and then get a third because you've got to rotate them through. That is when the Seahawks had the most success, and that's what they need again.
Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
Sour Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. Are there any Seahawks besides Russell Wilson who deserve awards? We'll talk about that next, 710 ESPN.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Yo, I got to remind you guys about something here. We're doing kind of a have an opinion already, kind of an answer the question jerk type thing at 2 o'clock today. So, down at the Super Bowl, they've had media day already where all the players are up there. And the media can ask them any question they want, right? They can ask them what they had for breakfast. Any crazy old question that you think of that comes into your head, you can ask the players. So today at 2 o'clock, we're going to do Tom, Jake, and Stacey Media Day. It's a relative of having an opinion already. It's a distant cousin of Answer the Question Jerk. 2 o'clock, text us to the Coors Light text line, 710-710. We'll start taking your questions then. We may, depending on how it goes, we may even open up the phone lines a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We haven't really decided yet. But you can start texting in your questions now if you want. 710-710, again, to the Coors Light text line. That's coming up at 2 o'clock. All right. NFL.com, 2019 NFL Awards. So all their analysts came together, and they voted on a couple of different categories. Most Valuable Player, Offensive Player of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year. First of all, how many Seahawks do you think made any of these lists?
Only one, I'm assuming.
None.
I'm assuming in terms of not the winner, but just showed up, I'm assuming one.
And that person is?
Russell Wilson.
Which category?
I would guess MVP.
No.
Really?
Well, here's the interesting part. Most Valuable Player you know is going to a quarterback.
Yeah.
So how is that quarterback not also the Offensive Player of the Year?
I guess you're quantifying them in different aspects.
Could be two different positions, too.
Well, that's what it ended up being.
Yeah.
Oh, can I guess Offensive Player of the Year?
Yeah.
Michael Thomas?
Boom!
Yes, I win.
You win nothing! Most Valuable Player, Lamar Jackson, 22 votes. Patrick Mahomes, 2 votes. And then the Offensive Player of the Year, like Stacey just offered, Michael Thomas, and then after that, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey, and then some guy named Russell Wilson, tied with Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. It's interesting when you look at it from that standpoint, because for me, I look at Russell's performance in terms of Offensive Player of the Year, and this is, I guess, the difference of what we talked about earlier or a month or so ago on our show about what is MVP and what's Offensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
And I would say that Russell is much more suited towards MVP than necessarily Offensive Player, because I deem that going to like the best performance of the year.
Gaudy numbers.
Yeah. And Lamar had gaudy numbers. Michael Thomas had unbelievable numbers.
McCaffrey,
unbelievable numbers. Russell had really strong, good numbers, but they weren't gaudy in the sense that they were completely separate. You know, he separated himself from around the league. But what he did do is he did put a team on his back and help them become 11-5 when they were, you know, talent-wise across the board, nowhere near that.
Defensive Rookie of the Year. Who do you think that went to?
Nick Bosa.
Yep, you got that one. You nailed it. 21 votes on that. You want to guess 2 and 3?
Sure. For Rookie of the Year?
Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Defensive Rookie of the Year. Is Josh Allen a rookie?
Yeah.
Josh Allen?
Indeed. Good guess, Stacey.
Thank you.
You are on it. He was number two.
Is number three like a defensive back? I feel like I'm trying to mix it up here.
You're trying to mix it up. No.
Linebacker.
Yes. An American football linebacker.
An American football
as it
linebacker.
Turns out. Yeah.
Who's the... Never mind, I'm thinking Leighton Vander Esch, but he's not a rookie.
No, but you know who's interesting is maybe is it Devin Bush? So it's interesting because he had a horrific game, absolute horrific game against the Seattle Seahawks, and Will Disley's two touchdowns were against Devin Bush. And then I kept hearing how great of a year he was having, so he must have from that point on really turned it around for himself, because that was that was not a really good performance from him in game three of the season.
Coach of the year.
Shanahan.
I'm going to give, hold on, let's see. All of these guys were playoff coaches. Pete Carroll not on the list.
Harbaugh, not Shanahan,
not surprising.
Reed.
Not surprising.
Okay, you got 1 and 2, Harbaugh, Shanahan, in that order.
Reed
very,
is
very
third.
Good. Andy Reid is not on here.
Belichick not on there?
Bill Belichick not on here. I mean, he didn't win the Super Bowl. He can't get that award.
Tennessee Titans coach.
Vrabel. Is Vrabel three?
He's three.
Okay.
And then the last two got a vote apiece.
Carroll?
No, he's not on here.
Oh, sorry.
I told you they're playoff coaches, so I might as well just tell you.
Peterson?
Sean McDermott and Sean Payton.
Okay.
Sean McDermott. Man, you know what? I've completely forgot about the Baltimore Ravens. I've forgotten about Lamar Jackson. I've forgotten about Mark Ingram and John Harbaugh. And the way that they just dominated 2019, because since they were beaten by Tennessee a couple weeks ago,
it
feels like it was a year ago.
Well, it's weird because it was just this anticlimactic ending to what was a season everyone was watching.
Right. It wasn't even a close game. I mean, Tennessee went into their building and just hammered them.
Well, and it was just disappointing.
It was disappointing. And also, there's also a reality to it of, okay, the Baltimore Ravens, for the majority of the season, were able to play with house money. And what I mean by that is that they were not because they were given any sort of advantage, but because they went out there and they were able to jump on people early.
Which always
played from ahead and with a comfortable lead for the majority of their games.
Which leads me to my next point. I'm so glad you said that. I disagree staunchly with the idea that you cannot win a game in the first quarter or the second quarter.
Yeah, I firmly disagree with that.
Look at the Baltimore Ravens. And by the way, I mean because like Mike and I were talking about there, he was saying how games are designed to be close. Yes, they are designed to do that. And we have close games every week. I just picked a random week in 2019, week 9, okay? I wanted to see how many games were decided by more than a touchdown, so more than 8 points. I gave you the 2-point conversion. How many, week 9, random week, just take a guess. How many games do you think were
decided by less than 8?
Yes. Out of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 games.
10. Okay.
Lower.
Lower than that? Six games.
6 games out of 14. That's a lot of games decided by more than a touchdown.
Right.
Meaning you can go out there. Now, I don't know the sequence of the scoring in all these games. Baltimore Ravens, 37-20 over the Patriots. I'm guessing they didn't score 37 points in the fourth quarter.
Well, and that's the idea of where the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens, they really put an emphasis on going and trying to steal games away. They're going to go in there and they are going to put it is pedal to the metal, full gas from the beginning all the way through the game. Even when we have a comfortable lead, I watched the Baltimore Ravens and they're playing in games and they've got a 2-touchdown lead. They're up 14, 17 points, and they're still going for it on fourth down, fourth and medium and fourth and short. Why? Because they're trying to drive a huge wedge and a gap between their opponent to where there cannot be a Russell Wilson miracle comeback.
Exactly. I don't want to have to look. I like the Seahawks. I like that they play close games because it's interesting as a fan. But if I'm a fan that's really focused on just winning and getting to the Super Bowl, I want a team that's going to go in and steamroll somebody for once. I can't do this every single week. The players can't do it every single week. It wears on them.
Yeah.
You can't bank on having to win every single game close like that. That's why you're 11-5 and not 14-2.
And maybe we could talk about this at a different point in the show, but there is a difference. Pete Carroll always talks about doing right longer. He talks about, always making sure that you're outlasting your opponent. To me, that comes down to a coaching philosophy that is teaching and building an organization to show them how to win close games, but that's not the ultimate goal. For Pete Carroll, he said multiple times, hey, I would like to win by a wider margin instead of having this thing come down, to the wire every single game. I dismiss the idea that Pete Carroll wants to win by only 3 points or a touchdown at the end of games, but his philosophy also, one, it tends to veer that way, but more so what his philosophy is saying is if we're in these situations, unlike the Baltimore Ravens, we know how to come back.
I don't think
we know how to talk.
I don't think
we
he's saying
to,
if, though. I mean, like, what I'm hearing from that is, I'd really like to lose weight, but, my philosophy is to eat ice cream every day. It's just not going to happen. Your team's not designed that way, and you sure as heck don't call the plays to go and blow everybody out.
You're right, and you're exactly right. I think that part of it is the intention is not for that, but everything that's talked about in that building does lead towards, okay, we are going to wait till the fourth quarter and try and win these games rather than coming out from the beginning and being the enforcer and jumping out ahead of people.
You know what we're going or where we're going next?
Where?
Miami.
Okay.
We're all going to take a trip to Miami together, and we're going to visit with our friend, John Clayton. The professor is next. He's going to tell us what's going on down there in South Beach. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.